Something for the weekend. Good morning, it's Trina Mara. I am in the attic right now and financial expert Eoin McGee is on the line. Good morning, Eoin. How are you?
Good morning. You're in your attic and I was talking to Ciara Kelly and she was in her under the stairs or the hot press or something. We're all gone a bit mad, aren't we, Trina?
I tell you what, we're going to start marketing these rooms as extra rooms in our houses now, really, aren't we?
Be careful now, they'll probably tax that somehow.
Oh, they will, yeah. Well, listen, I don't know whether you're as panicky as the rest of the country, or the rest of the world, I should say. How are you feeling about our finances at the moment?
I'm going to be honest with you. This is a scary time. That's what it is. And the reality is that I always look at these things. They're never as bad as we expect them to be. And they're never as good as we expect them to be. And I'm talking about all different things in life. But particularly at the moment, it's really scary because we don't know what's going to happen or when it's going to happen. We don't know how long it's going to last. We don't know. There's no certainty around it. So that just makes us scared. And the reality is that this is very different from a financial crisis perspective on a macro level. Forget about the individual here, and particularly the people who are really suffering and people losing their lives with this. But if we can take that out of it for a second and just be look at it from an economics point of view, from a macro level, this is very different to 2008. The recession in 2008 lasted a long time. And the big part of the reason for that was because it was to do with banks not trusting banks anymore. There was no trust there. So when things started to get fixed, the problem was is the trust had to be rebuilt again. This crisis is very different. It's a medical crisis. So once there's a medical solution found, we don't have to build up trust again. In fact, from a stock market perspective, which is really macro looking and really big top line stuff, stock market perspective, once there's a vaccine identified, it will very quickly be, okay, we know the vaccine, even if it's not available, we know there's a solution. This is when the solution will be available. It'll be next August or next February or whenever it is. And the stock markets will start to have money flowing around again and everything will start to improve. And that will start to trickle down. The difficulty with this crisis is that I think on a micro level this time, so for you and I, for the individual, it's going to be a much harder, sharper hit. But having said that, I do think government are making some really, really big decisions. And I think they're making some very clever decisions about some of the changes that they introduced earlier on this week around all the stuff about keeping people in work. And that's really important. So there's a couple of measures they've introduced. The first one is that if you're out of work because your company is closed down or because you've been exposed to COVID or you have COVID, well, then you immediately get a payment of €350 a week. Okay, so that's the bottom line, and it will last as long as this crisis lasts. That's the first thing, the first kind of front line. If something goes really drastically wrong, that's where you're at. The next one, though, which I think is going to start to really replace it, is they've introduced this measure where they've said if your employer's income has dropped, the turnover of the business has dropped by more than 25%, government will step in if you keep, if you're as an employer, keep your employees on the books and continue to keep them working, they will pay 70% of your employees' wages. Mm-hmm. And that's up to a maximum of €410 a week. Now, that's really clever for lots of reasons. And hold on a second. I'm not defending government. I'm not trying to support them. But I tell you why I think it's very clever. It's clever because when you think about it, you're not cutting the tie with your employee. Mm-hmm. You're also, from an employer, from the business owner's perspective, the big fear about when you let somebody go is it's a really hard thing to do. And I'm an employer, right? But when you let someone go, it's a really, really difficult thing to do. And then you can be a little bit scared about taking them back on again. Oh, maybe it hasn't turned around fully yet. Oh, I won't. I'll give it another week and then I'll take them on. And then you go looking for them and they've got another job because they couldn't wait long enough.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of inconsistencies there, and it's really difficult. So what government have said is that they've looked at the numbers, they've crunched the numbers, and I think there was a report out last week from PwC as well, so they may have had a little glance at that too. But the UK government have done it as well. They've looked at the maths and they've said, you know what, paying this 70% of someone's wages is cheaper on the economy long term than it would be to let all these people go, pay them the social welfare, and then the long-term impacts that has on people's psychology, on employer psychology, but also it's a much better thing for the employee.
Yeah.
Like if you're working for somebody and you're told, you know what, your wage is going to drop to €410 a week. Now, government have also allowed you as an employer, if the business owner decides to top up your wages from €410 to what you're usually on, government is saying, happy days, go with that. But that just keeps everything ticking over. It means hopefully people, if they're still on the same wages, can still pay their mortgage or their rent and all that stuff continues to tick over. But not only that, think about it, 4 months from now, 5 months from now, whatever it is, and I'm not a medic, I have no idea how long this is going to last. But when this is all over, if you've continued to be employed the whole way through and your wages haven't been impacted that drastically, the first thing we're going to do is go to restaurants. the first thing we're going to do is book the holidays. They're the things that we're really going to miss. We're going to want to see our friends. We're going to want to socialize with our friends that we haven't seen. And if you've managed to keep your employment income the same the whole way through, you're much more likely to do that than if you think about it, if you're off work for a couple of months and now the restrictions are lifted, you're kind of going, yeah, I'm not going to go and see the lads or the girls because I just don't have the money, or I'm a bit embarrassed about the fact that I was out of work for the last couple of months, which is a real thing. People get embarrassed, even though the thing has nothing to do with them and it wasn't anything to do with their doing.
And it does give a sense of hope, doesn't it? If you know that your job is still, they're trying to hang on to you, that you're not gone.
Yes, and you're not gone. And do you know what else what I thought was great? I heard the minister talking during the week, and the Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue, and he came out and said, if you're an employer who actually let somebody go, think about re-employing them under this scheme now. Get them back on the books again under this scheme, the 70% scheme. Now, imagine the lift that gives someone. Imagine the week you've just had if you were let go. And the next minute your boss rings you and says, you know what, I'm bringing you back on again. Like, it's always about money, but it's also about psychology. It's about how people feel and the knock that people take when they get let go from work, when it's nothing to do with them. We are all in the same boat together. And you know what? There's an element of that too. Like, there's no pressure at the moment. People aren't spending money on things. People can learn a lot from this, by the way, Trina. You can learn a huge amount at the moment about what's actually important. What do you spend your money on that's really important to you? Think about it. There will be people who come back from this, and I am taking the mick. Am I allowed to say taking the mick?
Yes.
I am allowed to say taking the mick. But I am taking the mick when I always go after coffee, but it's kind of a financial planner thing to do. But very few people are actually now, oh, I couldn't get by without my Costa coffee or my Starbucks coffee or my butler's coffee every day. I need that every day. Guess what? You've been at home for 2 weeks now and you haven't had one of them. You've been grand with the one that came out of the kettle. The thing about it is that we do start to learn and value and appreciate the things that are important to us at times like this. And it is something that when you go back to, when life goes back to normal, and guess what? Life will go back to normal. But when life goes back to normal, you really need to take the lessons we've learned from this in terms of what was important to you, and don't let the city habits that wasted your money before kick back in again. And there is a sense of community here, though. There is a sense of we're all in this together. And you know what? I think it's great. I think there's certain things that we've seen people have spent money on. Like, I have a new book out. I'll tell you about that in a minute. But I have a new book out. Someone texted me yesterday on Instagram, or sent me a message on Instagram, and said what they're doing at the moment is the petrol money that they're not spending, they're treating themselves to books with that, and they've just bought my book. And I went, wow, like, so you're not spending money on petrol because you're not going to work, but you're using that petrol money now to do something that you really want to do, and they're building their book collection. And these are the things that we can learn about why we spend money, where we spend money, and what's actually important to us.
Owen, can I ask you about the mortgage situation? So a lot of people, about a week ago, when we heard that the mortgages, well, some of the banks were going to be giving a 3-month payment break, everyone was getting on the phone to their bank. And I know there was kind of an hour long kind of wait on the phone. What should we do now? Because things have maybe changed slightly for some people where they may be getting a lot of their income. Should they still be taking that break on their mortgage, or what would you advise?
Okay, well, the first thing I would say to you is that if you don't need to take a mortgage break, don't take a mortgage break for a couple of reasons. First of all, I was extremely disappointed with the banks, because the banks 10 years ago, they were in trouble 10 plus years ago now, and society bailed them out. Now society are in trouble, and this was the chance for the banks to repay the favour and bail society out. What they did was they introduced measures, but they're still charging you interest. When you take your 3-month break, this word was going around about mortgage freeze. And I said, happy days, they've seen the light. They're going to just freeze it as if the next 3 months didn't happen at all. That's not the case. The interest you don't pay in the next 3 months will be added to your mortgage, and you will end up paying more over the term of your mortgage than you would have if you hadn't taken the 3 months. For reason number one why you wouldn't take it if you don't need it is because it's going to cost you money in the long run. Not massive amount of money, and the bank will write to you and show you exactly how much, but it's going to cost you money if you take this break. But the other reason why you shouldn't take it is because if you take it and you don't really need it, the more of these requests that come in, the more pressure the banks are under to stop them. So you could be taking it off somebody, and we talked about sense of community, you could be taking it off somebody who really needs it when you don't really need it. Don't get me wrong, if you're in a position that you need to take it, take it. Don't worry about the extra interest, don't worry about anything like that. Just take it, just do it, because that's the position you're in. But if you're not really, let's go back to the sense of community and say, I don't need it, let someone else take it that does.
What about though, Owen, sorry to interrupt, but what about if you don't really know, you are uncertain, you might be okay, you know, at this moment in time, but by next month, you don't know whether you're going to be okay or not. And maybe the opportunity is going to be only there for a short period of time for you to take advantage of this. It's hard to know what to do for people.
Yeah, I don't believe that it's going to be pulled on you that quickly. I think that if your circumstances change, then you will be able to apply. But remember, these three-month things were always there. They didn't create these from nothing. The only change they've made, and I will give them credit for this, the only change they've made about this is that traditionally they would ask you to fill out this big, long form when you were applying for this that tells them, like, you had to tell them what you had for breakfast and how much it cost and how much you spend on your TV package and all of this stuff. And it was actually very demoralizing for people. People had to really disclose everything to do with their finances. And you had to jump through hoops to get one of these breaks. Now I'm getting lots of feedback from Instagram from people who have applied for this, and it's one phone call, a couple of questions, and it's done. That's the only difference. This mechanism was always there in the past. So if your circumstances change in 3 months' time and this thing happens to have been pulled, well, then it's just back to the old way of doing it, which was, yeah, you're going to have to tell them what you had for breakfast this morning. But if you're in the position that you really need it, you'll still get it because it existed before COVID-19 and it will exist after COVID-19. So, yeah, you need to do a bit of planning here. You need to look at your finances. You need to look at what your income is. And if your income has changed, probably one of the first things to go, to be fair, is going to be the mortgage. And that's where I'm saying to you, don't be worrying about the interest or anything like that now, if that's the position you're in. Mm-hmm. But if it looks like your income could remain steady, try and keep the ship afloat and not have to resort to that, the changes to your mortgage, if at all possible. But it's not the end of the world if you have to take a break from your mortgage or your car loan or your personal loans. It's okay. That's what these breaks are for, to give you some support when you actually need it.
Do you only get one opportunity across the term of your mortgage to take this moratorium?
No. No, like, it's all circumstantial. It depends on what's going on. They will look at you and they will say, okay, do you need this? Do you not need this? Like, I'm talking about in ordinary times. Forget about COVID-19.
Yeah.
Do you need this? Do you not need this? Now, it does go against your credit record. It's going to be marked on your credit that you've taken a break. However, and last week, even with COVID-19 breaks, the suggestion was it was still going to affect your credit. But I noticed that on Tuesday, there was an announcement from government, all these changes that they introduced. And in that, buried in the documentation of that, it said COVID breaks will not affect credit record. And I went, wow, so that's a change from the week before. So if these things are changing all the time.
Yeah.
So at the moment, that 3 month break, the suggestion from government is that it's not going to damage your credit in any way. Whereas ordinarily, when you're taking, it's not necessarily damage your credit. It's just, it gets recorded and people will know that it was a, that you took a break, and you can explain it. Now, people take breaks for things like, I've had a baby and I'm off for 6 months, and they've taken a 6 month break, and my mortgages would be approved for that. And 3 years later, you're going in to apply for a mortgage and they say, oh, hold on a second, there was a break here for 6 months. What was that for? I was having a baby. I was at home with the baby. Oh, grand, fine, and move on.
Right.
So it's not a big deal, but it's not the best thing in the world to be doing in terms of your finances. Like, I wouldn't want to be taking 10 of them in a 20-year mortgage. Like, you are storing up a little bit of a problem for the future, but if you're really stuck for it, take it and deal with that problem later.
Owen, talk to me about people who have been saving up to buy a home, or maybe they're in the middle of selling their current home and they wanted to maybe get a bigger house or remortgage or whatever. Is this going to have a huge effect on them?
So it's actually interesting. Again, Instagram has been incredible for me over the last couple of weeks. Like, just the amount of engagement in there has been incredible. I've been doing these Ask Me a Question things and they've been very popular. But one of the questions that keeps coming back over and over and over again on Instagram is the idea of, I've just gone sale agreed, or I'm just about to buy, or what'll I do? There's a couple of things you need to take into account. If you're buying a house and it's an investment property and you're planning on flipping, it's best to look with that in ordinary times, but definitely best to look with it right now. Mm. And you're a different kettle of fish altogether. Let you off, right? But if you're buying a home, a house that you plan to turn into a home, and you're planning on spending the next 20 or 30 years in it, what I would say is that everything has lined up to this point. You've got the mortgage approval. You've found the house that you want to turn into a home. This is hopefully is perfect for you because you're about to make a massive financial decision. And what I would say is in 20, 30 years from now, I don't think you're going to be sitting in the kitchen saying, I wish I had waited 6 months. Because the value of the house is still going to be greater than it is. Even if values go up or values go down in the next 6 or 12 months, in 20, 30 years from now, the likelihood is that they're going to be greater than whatever you pay for them now or in 6 months' time. And the thing about it is that people can get caught up in these things, but I don't want to be in negative equity. Like, when you're paying the mortgage in a month, if you can afford the mortgage repayment, if you're happy with the price that you're paying for it, don't take the risk. You don't know where you're going. First of all, we don't know where house prices are going to be in 6 months' time. Anyone who tells you where house prices are going to be in 6 or 12 months from now is guessing or lying. We don't know. We've no idea. Mm. But you've got mortgage approval, so it means you're in a good stead at the moment that you're able to buy the house. You don't know where you're going to be in 6 or 12 months' time. And as we said, if you're in a negative position in 6 months' time, you go in and you apply to the bank and you say, this is the problem I'm in, and they deal with it like they always had. But also, you don't know where the bank is going to be in 6 months' time. Like, the bank could be not willing to give out mortgages again. Now, don't let me call this hysteria. I'm not suggesting that there's any suggestion of that.
Yeah.
But they may. We have no idea where interest rates are going to go. We don't know. You know everything about the house you're about to buy right now. So consider that before you pull out of a purchase.
Okay.
And what I would say is that there's just too much unknown. And if this is a home, it's not an investment. It's a home you're buying. And everything has lined up to this point to get it, and I think you're taking a huge risk if you delay the purchase because you're trying to play the property market with your home. There's okay. too much emotion wrapped up in it, is my opinion on it.
So young couples who've been saving away, trying to, and they haven't actually put in for their mortgage yet, but they're hoping to get approved, just go ahead as if everything was normal and hope for the best?
Yeah, I think ignorance is bliss in a situation like this. Like, I just think, what do you mean I can't put my mortgage application in? Do you know what I saw? Actually, someone contacted me on Instagram last week. And they said to me, I've applied, I've got approved. But now the bank have come back and looked for a set of projections office for my business. I'm self-employed. What do you think, Owen? Hang on, ask them for a projection for the next 6 months of what their business is going to look like. Would you come off with that?
Yeah, ridiculous.
I had a bank manager years ago, and he said to me, I've never seen a bad set of projections, Owen. do you think the business owner is going to sit down and say, you know what, I think it's going to look crap for the next 6 months, and here it is on paper for you?
It's like, you know, when people go on the Dragon's Den and it's gas, and they say, okay, so I have this product and I think it's going to make 5 billion by next year. You're going, right, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so this is just the world we live in. Like, banks are asking silly things of people that they couldn't offer themselves, that they couldn't do themselves. But no, plow ahead. Stick your application in. Do you know what? I take three, what do we call, initial phone calls from private clients a day. So they're booked in well in advance. So there's lots of people still coming through. And I take three new clients who are looking to become new clients of my private practice. And talking to these people every day, there's a new person, three new people every day. And talking to these people every day, there is a lot of people who are not affected by this thing at all. Like, people in the pharma industry. Like, I saw a figure yesterday that showed that German retailers, now I don't know what it is here in Ireland, but German retailers, food shops, are up by 40%
yeah.
in the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are people, inhumane and all as it sounds, there are industries that will do very well out of this. Banks still need to give out mortgages. Houses need to, when all of this is over, we're still going to have a housing crisis. Like, that doesn't just disappear because we've had this pandemic. So think about that when you're thinking about playing the property market and not buying your house for 6 months. There is still a housing crisis in this country. We still don't have enough supply. And supply is going to be seriously hindered now because construction workers are being asked not to go to work. So these problems will still exist. The whole world has not changed. It feels like it has, but it hasn't changed completely. And we need to bear that in mind. And life will go on. And my favorite phrase of all of this right now is, this too shall pass. And I just think it just captures everything about where we are. Financially, not the biggest problems in the world. There's other things, and I think us being stuck at home at the moment makes a big difference to that, in terms of we value things differently and we know what's important to us. And money problems are money problems, but you know what? They will be fixed and they will be sorted and we will get on with life, and this too shall pass.
Question for your own about people who have bought cars, and a lot of people who have cars in this PCP thing. I saw a video, I don't know whether how accurate it is, but it was of somebody getting panicky and returning a new car to a garage and driving it through the garage door saying, I bought this last month, can't afford it.
Yeah.
What do you do if you've got a car, for example, that you bought and you're feeling, my God, I don't think I'm going to be able to keep up these repayments?
Well, one thing that's very unique about the situation with the mortgage situation is that they've said in the mortgages take 3 months and we're not going to ask you to jump through hoops. We will charge interest, which I think was a bad move, but we won't get you to charge through hoops. All the car loan providers and all the other provider, personal loans and everything else, have agreed to the same thing.
Okay.
Now, they don't have the same pressure on them, but my understanding is that they are just following suit and they're doing the same thing as well. So if you're worried about your car loan repayments, ring them, ask them, can you take a break?
Okay.
And I would be disappointed if you weren't being offered the same thing as you would be on the mortgage. And I did see that video as well. I saw the picture of the car gone through the showroom window, which is unfortunate. But you know what? It does show you, give you an idea of I wonder what that driver who drove, my understanding was he walked up and said, I can't have this car, take it back. And they said, no, sorry, that's not how it works. So we got into his car and he drove into the glass of the showroom.
Yeah.
And smashed the glass and his car as well. It's just unfortunate because I wonder if somebody had to react slightly different. And you know what, if you get onto the car loan provider, you might get 3 months off. I'm not sure his car would be stuck into the garage right now. So get yourself informed before. It's like what we started with, Trina. At the very start of this, I said, the big problem here is we don't know. The stuff we don't know. It's the unknown that really scares.
Yeah, I suppose you can only control what you can control. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, there's so many. We talked about community, Trina. There's so many people in this position. There's nothing to be embarrassed about. Your bank, you're probably not getting through to them because there's so many people looking to talk to them. Just the biggest mistake you can make with this, particularly when it comes to loans, is in 5 years' time, if you were perfect coming up to COVID, you had a problem during COVID and you were perfect after COVID, well then, I believe in 5 years, 3 years' time, you're looking for a mortgage, you're looking for a loan, oh yeah, that was just COVID and I don't think it's going to be an issue. Except if you stick your head in the sand. There is nothing more frustrating to a bank than somebody who is in trouble and won't talk to them. Talk to your banks. Tell them what's going on. I had a situation last week where somebody asked me a question again online, asked me a question about, I've been trying to get my bank, I can't make the repayments next week, what will I do? Do you know what you do there? You keep a copy and a log of every phone call you made and how long you spent on hold, and you keep a log of all of that, and then you start emailing them.
Okay.
And you email them immediately after the phone call to say, I've just spent 20 minutes on hold, or I've just spent 2 hours on hold. And then you start asking the questions and you tell them by email in advance, I'm not going to make the payments next week, if you can't get through to them. Because it's about communication and proving that you communicated with them the whole way through. And that's the most important thing you can do to make sure you protect your credit rating in the future.
Oh, do you know much about the crash situation? Because I'm kind of in the situation myself. So the payment is due out next week. And obviously the creche is closed. The child is at home. What do we do? The creche haven't communicated to us whether we're supposed to pay or not.
Yeah, well, the creche, there was a special deal done by government this week that showed that what they're going to do with the creche is, it looks like they're going to make payments in full to the employees of creches. Mm-hmm. In the same way that if someone in the public sector is out of work, they're getting paid the full if it's as a result of COVID. So that means in return, the creches are not going to be charging people. Now, that's very fresh. I don't know how it's going to be implemented. I think the conversations are still ongoing, but that's certainly what it looks like, that you won't be charged creche fees because the creche employees are going to be paid in full, even though they're closed. And you know what? People might argue, well, how come they're not paying? Why isn't government paying 70% of my wage? The difference here is there was an absolute instruction from government, and it was for the good of the country not to have kids in the creche.
Yeah.
In the same way, it was not to have kids in school. So I think it's a special case in this situation, and I can see why our money, it's not government, by the way, it's our money. I can see why our money is being used to pay for creches, because it was for the good of the entire society. And my understanding is that you won't be charged for the weeks that your child wasn't there, and you won't be charged going forward while your child is not in creche. But let's just see how that irons out over the next few days or so.
If you haven't heard from the creche, though, and money is due to come out, say, maybe Tuesday or Wednesday of next week, should you be cancelling your direct debit, or what would you advise on?
Well, I would actually treat it the same way as you would with a bank. You're going to still owe them some money because they were in for some of March, right?
Yeah, but you normally pay the month in advance, though.
Okay. Well, then what I would do is the same way you would treat with any of your banks, try and get in touch with them, try and ring them. If you can't get a hold of them, well, then they will be in touch with you fairly quickly if they were expecting money off you on the 1st. But email them, keep a record of all the times you tried to contact them. And then on the 1st, because this is less to do with your credit rating and more got to do with keeping your child's place in the creche.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
I would start ringing them today or send them an email today and saying, what am I to do with my payment? And you know what? I don't think it's a bit of a hassle for you, but it might be easier just to cancel your direct debit this time, because I think it might be easier for you to keep it in your pocket and have to give it to them 2 days late if that's what ends up happening, than it will be for you to give it to them and ask them to give it back to you.
Yeah.
My concern here, to be honest with you, Trina, is I don't want to cause mass hysteria for the creche owners of the country by suggesting to everybody that they cancel their direct debit to the creche. So my first line would be, go communicate with your creche and see what the facilities or the arrangements are with them. Mm-hmm. And if at a last resort you have logged the calls, you've emailed them and you're getting nowhere, well then maybe it might be time to cancel the direct debit and wait for them to come talk to you. Don't spend the money though, Trina. Do you hear me?
Not a hope of that. Come here to me, Owen. Never has there been a better time to have a book out in a way, because not only do we have lots of time in our hands at home, but we're all thinking about money. We're really thinking about money. So tell me about the new book.
Yeah, never a better time to have a book about money out, except for the fact that all the bookshops are closed.
Ah, yeah, can walk sure. Buy it off. Don't worry about that.
I rely on people like you. So there's a new book. It's called, so I was involved, I present a TV show called How to Be Good with Money. It runs on RTE. It's just the last second season, just finished there at the end of February, early March. And on the back of that, I've written a book called How to Be Good with Money. And it launched last Friday week, the 20th of August. So it launched last Friday week. It's in bookshops, but bookshops are closed. But you can buy it online. And the two things I say to you. So the book covers everything. So we start with the whole area of your day-to-day spending, which is really valuable at the moment. So how do you spend money? What way do you spend money? Some of the conscious decisions we make and unconscious, and some of the psychology around our spending. So we talk about that and how to get your spending rules. As opposed, I don't like the word budgets. I like spending rules. So we talk about that. Then we talk about getting into debt. So how do you get mortgage ready and what way best to present yourself, but also how to get out of debt, like your crappy debt, like your car loans and your personal loans, and how should you tackle them? Then we move on to investing, savings, investing and pensions, and how does that be done right? And to be honest with you, investing is really simple. It's really boring. I think it's been made overly complicated to create jobs for the boys, but that's all in the book as well. And then finally, protecting it all. What happens if something goes wrong, somebody dies or somebody gets sick? So that's the main sections within the book. The book has been doing extremely well, despite the fact that bookshops are closed. We're doing really well in the charts. What I would say to you is you can always buy it online. So you can buy it on Easton's. You can also buy it with Debray Books. Debray have a competition at the moment that you can win a consultation with me if you buy the book through Debray. But what I would say to you is your local bookshop may be closed, but a lot of the bookshops, the locally owned bookshops, if you ring them up, they will and pay for the book online, they will post it out to you. And I think that's a really nice way of keeping your local bookshop going, because it's a difficult time for them. So try that first. And if you don't get that, go to your usual online things, your Easton's and your Debray and all the other ones, the Amazons or whatever else that you like to buy your books from.
Yeah, it's great actually, because we often have one of the guys from the Gutter Bookshop, the independent bookshop, often have him on the show. And I noticed on Twitter, he put up a picture saying that he is in there doing orders and he's like 3 or 4 days behind because they're so busy. People are copping on, they're buying books online and they are supporting the local bookshop as well. So I suppose back in the recession in 2008, when we got through all that, we all said to ourselves, oh, we're going to cop on now and we're going to really plan our money and we're going to spend money in the right way. And then we kind of lost the run of ourselves a little bit in the last couple of years. Maybe this is a little bit of a wake up call.
Yeah, possibly. Well, no, I'm glad you used the words, I kind of lost the run of ourselves. Wasn't there a politician who said we partied hard and didn't go down very well? So I didn't use those words, you did. But you know what? This is a real opportunity. We've covered it already, but it is a real opportunity to take stock. What's important and what's right? I'd actually challenge your listeners today. Take out, I bet you, you'll save about 300 or 400 quid. Take out your last gas or electricity bill or both, ideally both, and get on to switcher.ie or bonkers.ie. I've nothing to do with those companies. They're just the two approved companies for doing this. With your bill in your hand, you can switch provider if you've been with your provider and you're out of contract, and you'll save somewhere around 300 or 400 euros is the typical one. And if you do that today, do let us know on Instagram and Twitter at Owen McGee or Instagram Owen_McGee. I'm sure you want to know too, Trina. But if you've saved money, do let us know.
I nearly collapsed, Owen. During the week, I got a bill for €634 gas bill.
That's because your child has been crashing. They're using all the
heating's on all the time. Oh,
yeah. But it's a great way of doing it. Like, think about it. Electricity companies work really well and gas companies work on the basis that inertia kicks in. So they'll be really happy and attractive. Come over here, be a new customer. We'll look after you really well for the first 12 months. And then after the first 12 months, they ratchet up the rates again. So that's something positive you can do for your finances right now. You'll take control. Get online today at some stage. It'll take you less than 15 minutes if you've got the bill in your hand and you'll be able to save about 300 or 400 quid is the typical, I think, in the first year. And you know what? You'll be feeling happier about your money after that one. And you can choose that 300 or 400 quid to buy a book.
Yes. Owen, plug the book again. What's the name of it?
How to Be Good with Money.
Your gas. Thanks so much, Owen. It's something for the weekend on Classic Hits.